Welcome to a new episode of Skin in the Game. I'm your host, John Semperman, with my co-host,
Tim O'Shai.
Hey, Tim, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, John. It's a lovely July day. And have you been getting through the heat okay?
Oh, yeah, just fine. Just, you know, something. It's the same people that complain about the heat that complain about the cold. So I'm not going to complain about either.
I always try to remind myself of that. I will say I've been traveling quite a bit. And I've been between New England and Chicago and Ohio and here in Buffalo, and it has been impossible to escape the heat, and I am loving it. And I'm loving the World Cup. I'm loving today's guests. There's a lot to be excited about. Tim,
you need to take a few hydration breaks.
Here's a segue for you, John. I indeed have taken some hydration breaks in each of those regions I was in. And sat at a bar and watched some World Cup, which I am going to guess that you probably have done the same.
Yeah. No, and you know something? The World Cup has been really great to watch. And for me, watching, you know, is at home, but also a lot of viewing parties, right? Where restaurants, bars, kind of communal areas come together to watch and experience the World Cup. It's been great. And, you know, Tim, I think what's great is just the power of sport to bring people together from different backgrounds, different cultures. I loved the stories of all of these soccer fans, football fans coming to the States and experiencing the States for the first time, whether it's walking into a Walmart and being blown away or, you know, a lot of other, I guess, conveniences that we here in the States sometimes take for granted. It's really been fun to watch and listen to others come visit us and experience, you know, all the greatness that we have here.
And I got to tell you, John, in every city that I've been in, I've seen that. You know, and it's not just in the cities where, you know, like Boston, for example, but, you know, I was up in Maine, and you saw World Cup fans in Kennebunkport, Maine, right? So they're not only are they coming to the States, to these different cities, to Canada, to, you know, up to Toronto, they're veering out too, and they're checking out other areas. And it'll be interesting in the coming weeks and beyond to get a sense of, you know, what's the impact, the economic impact, the cultural impact? Like, what does this mean for us? What kind of legacy is this World Cup going to leave behind? It'll be significant.
Yeah, no, and you know, I think it's a good point. We do need, and we will bring on a few guests over the next month to really look at kind of quantifying what the return for the World Cup has been. But, you know, from all of the anecdotes I hear, whether it's the streets of Las Vegas, where there are no World Cup games, have plenty of international visitors, to, you know, I love the story, and I know we talked about this, all the Scots coming in and drinking just about every ounce of beer in Boston.
I thought about that when I was in Boston a few days ago. Yeah. I was like, where are the Scots now? I'd love to see this. They were not around.
Yeah. No, so we'll, still more time to go on the World Cup. And it's been great TV viewing, great ratings. And I think economically, for a lot of those cities that have hosted it, I think they've seen a really nice bump. So stay tuned on that. But hey, Tim, I do want to talk about our guest today. We have the president of New Era Cap, Bruce Popko, joining us on the show today. And I think as background for all of our listeners, you know, Bruce was one of the key executives at the Buffalo Bills, the Sabres. I met Bruce when he was actually working for the Cleveland Browns. So he brings with him a lot of experience on the property side. And it sounds like he's going to be bringing that experience now to the licensee side.
I want to, before we get into Bruce and his current role with New Era, I also want to add that he was the commissioner of the pro Major League Pickleball, the Pro Pickleball League,
oh, that's right.
Which I think, which had a resume, I think is, we don't really get into it with him. There's so much, too much to talk about in a good way with New Era. But what a cool resume line. And, you know, pickleball, by the way, for people who are pickleball fans, we've got a great pickleball episode coming up soon too. I will say this, when you look at Bruce's career trajectory, and again, our conversation is going to focus on the today and forward. But he has, he's been an NFL executive in multiple cities, as you just pointed out. He's running, one of the most significant, well, certainly probably the most significant, by far the most significant, headwear company in the world, sports headwear company, pop culture headwear company in the world. And yeah, I mean, it's, so that, but that same guy is running the, the pro side of the sport of pickleball. That shows you just how significant pickleball is. But I digress. I'm going to pivot over here to New Era Cap, John. When you think New Era, and you and I are sitting here in Buffalo, New York, where the company is headquartered, we both have a good sense of the scope of this company. But do you feel like the world knows it? Like, just everybody sees New Era caps almost every day if you're watching sports. And I still wonder if people actually realize that.
It's probably not. I mean, we're talking about a $2 billion company, right? Some of that value was via their recent acquisition of the 47 brand. So, and again, Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, all the licenses for those leagues. Plus, as you mentioned, I think the bigger part of it is the pop culture and the integration of sport and culture and the new merchandise, apparel, and headwear for, for those emerging cultural brands as well.
Turn on a TV and flip through some TV shows and movies, or especially flip through some, some different sports games, and see how long you go before you find a New Era logo on something. It is really one of the most iconic brands to come out of this country. And again, there's big ones like Nike that everybody knows and that are ubiquitous. And New Era for a long time was that scrappy company trying to come up on, the massive brands like that. But there's even some surprises in how New Era is working with Nike. We're going to get into that too. So great conversation with Bruce Popko. Really excited to share it with people.
Stay tuned. Now we have Bruce Popko, president of New Era Cap, joining us here on Skin in the Game. Bruce Popko, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
So we're catching you in the middle of a lot of craziness. You guys are super busy. But I just thought, Bruce, it'd be great for, I think most everyone knows of New Era, but just for our listeners and for our viewers, just kind of give us that 30,000-foot view on New Era.
Sure. New Era is a 106-year-old fourth-generation company based out of Buffalo, New York, with 16 offices around the world. Really the leading licensed headwear and apparel manufacturer in the world and marketer in the world. We acquired one of our biggest competitors, 47 brand, about 2 years ago, and that actually coincided with my arrival at New Era. I had been a Buffalo native for about 14 or 15 years prior to that in the sports industry, so always had a really close relationship with them and came on board in around that 47 acquisition and helped integrate them into kind of the mothership ultimately.
I want to jump right to that 47 acquisition, Bruce, because
Sure.
you know, it's I covered for a long time with the Buffalo News. I covered New Era. This might be a very Buffalo-centric view because New Era is based in Buffalo and I was based out of Buffalo. It always felt like, New Era dominated the space, but 47 had a very important legacy and a very important piece of the headwear industry. With that as context, I mean, what 2 years in, what does that acquisition look like? What does that brand development and brand differentiation look like?
It's been a really interesting journey. These are two brands that, to your point, were fierce competitors for the last probably half century, ultimately. Also, family owned, the D'Angelo family owned the 47 company, had been called Twins Enterprises before that, and had really grown up in and around the business. So they knew both manufacturing, they knew retail. They were really, really good at being what we call close to market. What we really looked at when the acquisition was taking place is that as much as these two brands compete with one another, they really stand for slightly different things. New Era, as you know, has always been really proud to be right in the middle of all those championship moments for certainly every major league sport, many other championship sports on a global basis. 47's got a little bit more of that off-field, upscale, but casual style to it. It felt like the perfect way to really build the headwear, you know, sort of licensed headwear business in another level. And they had a lot of licensing relationships that were complementary to it, a lot of retail relationships that were complementary to it. And it, you know, it sounds cliche, but it really has been a one and one making three. The two organizations have taught a lot to each other. We've been able to help them with some of the things related to scale and what you need to turn it into, you know, a business that's doing hundreds of millions of dollars versus a business that's doing billions of dollars. There's a lot to be said for what you're doing for sourcing, for what you're really doing from the manufacturing process, and then how you bring it to market. You know, both brands have been really good at storytelling. 47 especially, they stated their roots, and they have a brand affinity that is different, but I would say equally strong as New Era's is.
And Bruce, kind of diving into a little bit of Tim's question, is there any different target audiences or demographics? You know, how are each of the brands maybe carving out their lane a little differently?
They cross over quite a bit, but what I'd say is that, you know, in the 47 brand, you probably have a little bit more casual fan, probably a little bit more female fan ultimately, because a lot of it ends up being, you know, really headwear as this affordable luxury accessory that complements a lot of whatever that consumer is wearing that day. You know, at New Era, you know, we look at it as one of the ultimate ways of your self-expression is to decide not just whatever team or affiliation you're going to have, but then the way in which you do it. Wearing a red Yankees cap says something different about you than wearing a navy Yankees cap. Wearing a structured hat, like which is a 5950, you know, really the staple of New Era, is different than wearing an unstructured or casual cap, which is the cleanup, you know, really on the 47 side. So that's what we loved about them, is that where we could give the fan and the consumer the widest offering of their ability to show self-expression through sports teams and leagues and other sports and entertainment properties, it's been a wonderful marriage.
Let's even take a step back, and I'm sure we'll come back to 47, Bruce, but I want to ask you about the scope of New Era. And, you know, you mentioned 106 years old, fourth generation in the Cook family with, you know, Chris Cook being at the head of it now, 16 offices around the world, which is amazing, I think, to a lot of people, John. A lot of people don't realize. They knew New Era is a big deal, but not how expansive it is. How big has the company gotten, Bruce? And what's the growth trajectory look like?
Yeah, I mean, we're into the billions of dollars in revenue at this point. We've been very fortunate in that we've experienced, you know, double digit growth every year that, you know, we've been in existence, and certainly especially, you know, from really the COVID period since then is when the business actually really exploded. The amazing part about the New Era side of the equation is that the globalization of the business happened in probably one of the most entrepreneurial ways you could ever imagine. So when we decided that, you know, gaining a bigger brand presence in Europe, in the Middle East, and Asia Pacific, every one of those businesses was set up slightly differently. You know, the business in Japan looks different than the business in the UK does. The UK side of it may be more reliant on licensed and have a bigger presence with some of the sports that are endemic there. Soccer, obviously, being, you know, one of the big ones, having some rugby properties, something like that. Where in Japan, they'll lean in on the licensed side, probably more heavily to baseball. But the Japan business particularly is incredible because the majority of their sales actually come from branded New Era merchandise with no licensing partner. The headwear, the apparel, a lot of accessories literally just have the New Era brand on it. And it really is construed as a very high fashion level brand in that part of the world.
Bruce, that's a great segue because, you know, I've, in my history on the agency side, I have done, you know, quite a bit of work back in the day with New Era and the marketing team there. And there was a real focus on building the New Era brand, right? Getting that flag out there so that it could actually hold its own, right? It sounds like mission accomplished in Japan. How is that building of that kind of lifestyle brand message working here domestically?
It's still one of those where it's a work in progress. You know, we've relied very heavily on the license side of the business to build the brand. So in essence, sometimes what you have is incredible advocacy because the quality of, I think no one would ever argue that a piece of headwear, a piece of apparel made by New Era is as good as it gets. So we're so fortunate to have that foundation. But when you have the main logo of somebody else on the front of the cap and really your brand on the side of the cap, you constantly have to reinforce the brand message. You know, so it's one where we measure it in two ways. We measure on advocacy and we measure on awareness. Our advocacy scores are through the roof. They rival the ubiquitous brands like a Nike or Adidas, where you love that brand so much, you want to tell people about it. You usually have, candidly, probably a closet full of our stuff. But in many ways, domestically, we still have awareness that we want to still achieve. We want to raise those awareness scores wherever we can. And we do it in lots of different ways. We do it in developing, you know, different parts of our line that are branded, and we target consumers there. We do it in our marketing and our storytelling. Just something like where you see maybe an ad as you go to a pro shop or you go to a retailer, and instead of the NFL shield always being up top in sort of the marquee position, in some cases we're putting the New Era flag in marquee position and then the NFL shield below it. And those are sometimes interesting conversations, our league partners, to make sure we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, you know, equitably, to make sure we're highlighting the association. But where you can put yourself in the position consistently, where you know that the merchandise stands up for itself, but you can put the brand forward as best you can, you know, good things continue to happen.
Tell us a little bit more about advocacy score. I'm taking it that that's essentially people who've already bought into the brand.
So an advocacy score really is related to what my willingness is that I've been a purchaser of the product, but my willingness is to tell other consumers about it without them having to ask me. Where awareness is just, can if I put the flag out, you know, either I put it on, you know, from a merchandise and it has it embroidered on the side, or I just show you the logo itself. They have usually unaided and aided. Unaided is I just put it there and you tell me whether you know it or not. Aided, I can say, hey, this is a headwear brand that is usually pretty significant in the license space. Do you think you know who it might be? And like I said, you know, our advocacy is through the roof, and that's 106 years in the making, you know, kind of deal. Awareness is something that even the Nikes and Adidas, you know, they run huge marketing campaigns. They spend a very large part of their budget reinforcing, you know, those sort of ubiquitous brands. So it shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody that we've got to fight tooth and nail to make sure that we increase our awareness every chance we get.
Hey, we're with Bruce Popko, the president of New Era. Bruce, we talked a lot about headwear, and where is the brand with other merchandise? I know there was a point years ago where there was also this impetus to be a fashion brand. Where does New Era stand on that today?
It's one of those combinations where being a fashion brand is important, but being true to who you are is probably more important ultimately. So what I think happens now for us is that we'll have programs, you know, a program with the Major League Baseball and with the NFL every year in NFL, you know, where it's, you usually have some things that are related to as close to on-field as possible. And then some things we're allowed to do that are not technically worn on-field, but are still part of our licensing rights. That's where you're going to get us really kind of providing the staples that fans want day in and day out. Then we do things sometimes in collaborative fashion with literally fashion brands. That's where we can step out a little bit, put forward some fashion items, some things that are a little bit more cutting edge for us and a little bit more non-traditional. And we usually find that they resonate really, really well with that consumer base. The amazing part is what we call sometimes the heat that gets developed, which is you put them out in small quantities, and in those small quantities, the demand obviously far outpaces the supply. It causes a bunch of noise, and in some cases, unfortunately, a little consternation with our consumers, but it ends up getting a lot of play usually in social media and in broadcast, and sometimes even when the athletes and entertainers are wearing everything.
Bruce, how does product placement in TV shows, movies, musicians, etc., play into the marketing mix for New Era today? I know it's been important for a long time, but where is it at today?
Yeah, it's always been an important part. I'll give you a couple of the amazing parts, though, that for us is that we've really never paid for product placement. There's a whole cottage industry. It's bigger than a cottage industry in Hollywood and in the original content business and even in sports that brands will pay to get product placed. And that can be automobiles and spirits and, clothing, like us, headwear and apparel manufacturers. We have always had, I'll say, enough street credibility that we've been able to certainly seed product in places, and then it ends up in there without ever really having to pay overtly to get that kind of product placement in there. And you sort of see it because there's an authenticity to it that, listen, if you're going to make a baseball movie, and let's say it's going to be, about one of the major league teams, you're going to put all the players in New Era headwear because, we're what you wear on the field. But even you take someone like, if you watch Landman at all,
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
one of the main characters in there wears a Texas Tech 47 cap. It's one of our trucker caps. It's one of the really, good ones that we make, but it's very authentic to who he is as a character on the show. So it's an amazing part of the business when it really goes. We've just enjoyed so many relationships where we'll make sure they have everything they need, but we haven't had to write big checks to make sure that it's included in whatever they're doing.
Now, I was going to say, Bruce, I am a big fan of Landman. So when I get my Landman Texas, is the rim already bent? Is the grease already on the brim of the hat? And
So in some cases, we will bend the brim for you. Believe it or not, we've got lots of different offerings all the way up to literally a V on the brim, which is a little extreme for most fans. And then all the way to obviously flat, which is how, something like the 5950 will usually come in its core form.
This is an old example, probably, but Bruce, I'm wondering if this kind of thing still happens. I had a friend working at New Era back when Beyonce and Jay-Z were having their daughter, and I was told there was a meeting at New Era, in a conference room, and this is a conference room in Buffalo, New York, trying to figure out, so what kind of custom cap do we want to send Beyonce and Jay-Z for their daughter? You know, the bigger picture there, of course, is you're trying to tap into the zeitgeist, and you're also trying to build relationships or maintain them with influential New Era fans. Do those kinds of meetings, that kind of thinking, still happen?
All the time. And I'll bring it full circle for you for Jay-Z particularly. Okay. So we've enjoyed a long relationship with him. There's a brand named Paper Planes that's out there. You probably have seen some of those hats where it's a sort of dimensional paper plane that is the front of the cap. That's been a long-standing relationship we've had. Jay-Z, as you know, is on tour this summer. So we literally are in the midst of our friends at the Yankees that are hosting a couple of the shows there. We're trying to figure out how to reward our friends at the Knicks by inviting them to the show as our guest, and literally kind of bringing one of those worlds colliding, to use the Seinfeld saying, that to have the ability to and the interaction that we've got with the Knicks and letting them enjoy that championship moment with literally a front row seat, coming back to the legacy of a Jay-Z relationship and being able to put all those pieces together is something that we're really fortunate. Those kinds of things, to answer your question, happen on a daily basis. It's so cool when you have, I'll give an example, someone like Zac Brown. Zac's been, touring and just a, an absolute, dominator in the music space, for the last decade now. He loves our stuff. And so we're making stuff for them, all the time. We have a recent relationship with Mumford and Sons. We're doing some things together, and they wanted a really cool spin on it. They're playing Wrigley and Fenway, so we made some stuff that took advantage of our rights to be able to talk about the ballparks, be able to use the band's name on the front. And it's to have those kinds of conversations and those kinds of relationships where, in many cases, the light bulb's going off for somebody outside the organization, and then reaching in to say, "Hey, how can we make this come to life?"
That's
I'll
great.
even localize it a little further. John, Borderlands, one where it's a, great festival in Western New York, music festival in Western New York and cultural festival. We finally cracked the code this year, and we're going to have a few things that they had some amazing artwork they've got from over the years.
Right.
We're going to play into a few of those things, and we'll be part of the lineup this year.
Well, that's great. And I think that leads to kind of where I want to take this conversation is this, this really this merger. And Bruce, you and I have been in the business for a long time, and the lines have continued to blur, and the categories between sport and entertainment are really now one in the same. And it,
for sure.
it just seems as if New Era is at really as part of that intersection, right? And that, you know, you used to wear the team hat or the team jersey when you went to the game. That's mm-hmm. not the case anymore. It's a statement of your passion and your following, right?
Yeah. And I'll give you another one. And this is, traces back, you know, John, to your point, how long that relationship between entertainment and sports has existed. And I didn't realize it was this old. We just celebrated very recently the 30th anniversary of Spike Lee wearing the red Yankees cap to really stand out at a game. And it was amazing. You know, we had the opportunity to have Spike at our flagship store in Manhattan. We did some other content, you know, right at Yankee Stadium where he sat with Chris Cook and they talked about everything went down. This is when David Cook, Chris's dad, was still alive and they had to call, you know, Mr. Steinbrenner to really talk about, like, I know this is the antithesis of wearing, you know, Yankees blue and, you know, everything that the pinstripes are and you know, what that uniform means. But, you know, this could be an important cultural moment. And to George's, to Mr. Steinbrenner's credit, you know, ultimately the conversation that he had with David Cook and then with Chris Cook was, if this is good for business, then let's go ahead and do it. And then obviously Spike thought that that was really also what gave them the World Series win. So, you know, at the end, everybody benefits.
Bruce, do you want to do the honors and just let people out there who haven't heard the story know what that phone call was about and how it led to everything?
He literally dialed up New Era headquarters in Buffalo and said, you know, let me speak to who runs the place. And so that call came through to Chris, and somebody basically like took a message and was like, all right, like somebody named Spike Lee just called and they'd like to know sort of, you know, they know something. So he calls back and he's like, you know, hey, this is Spike. I need a red cap for the game. And Chris was like, well, I mean, that's simply not something that we do. And he's like, yeah, no, I know, but we all know Steinbrenner. We'll call him. We'll get this done. There's a few different variations on who actually picked up the phone and called Mr. Steinbrenner to do it. Because, you know, listen, he was a tough character. He had a way that he wanted to do it. He had a championship tradition. And, you know, certainly they're the best-selling team within Major League Baseball. And certainly back then they were. So lo and behold, like I said, they finally got through to him and had a conversation where, you know, he hemmed and hawed a little bit, as you would expect. But ultimately he said, if you feel like this is going to be good for our business together, then I will let you go ahead and do this. But he said, there is no, you can't sell it. Can't. So we're like, well, wait a second. That's sort of not exactly the business that we're in ultimately. But we said, all right, let's start here. See where we go. We got him in the red cap. It obviously made the splash that it made. And then to figure out how to do it as a part of our business overall was sort of the next step, and that evolved and it finally occurred. And now, and this is where, again, the beauty of the 47 brand is a part of our portfolio. 47 has probably done it better than anyone, and literally taking as many colors as you could imagine and making not just Yankee caps, but lots of MLB teams. And again, you get back to those chances for the fan to really have their chance at self-expression in a meaningful way. And if that means it's a powder blue or a lime green or a red, you know, whatever it ends up being, we're really proud to be able to offer all those different things to the fans.
Yeah. Caps have really become works of art.
Well, they are. I just, you know, that was pivotal in changing so mm-hmm. much of the trends. And, you know, Bruce, the stuff that I'm seeing now out there with MLB, with the whole, you know, the city connects and these, you know, mm-hmm. the secondary and the tertiary right. uniforms and obviously headwear.
And minor league teams too.
Oh yeah.
You talk about cool caps with awesome logos. Yeah. Look at minor league baseball.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Hey, Bruce, wanted to talk a little bit, kind of taking a step back. It may have been 3 years ago. You would be able to correct me if I'm wrong. There was really more of an investment that came in from some of the leagues. So just kind of mm-hmm. give us an overview of what drove that decision. And then quite frankly, how's it going with the league investment?
You know, it has become the leagues as they have continued to evolve and become, you know, really big businesses have looked around at their business partners and quite simply said, We are sharing in the successes that we have together, where we're providing intellectual property rights or broadcast rights or, you know, whatever they have in terms of their business model. And with those partners, they have said, you know, listen, we would like to gain an ownership stake as a part of our overall economic equation in how we do business together. Mm-hmm. And listen, that's great for us as well. That's another way that we can make sure we stay tethered in a really meaningful way. We work together as business partners, even when there are times that are really difficult and we may be at odds over, you know, a certain part about how to run the business. But, you know, you look at really everything in the meaningful channels of revenue distribution that every one of the major leagues has. And really for every single one of them, they have in some cases, in ours, you know, a smaller equity stake. In some cases, you know, look at what NFL did between ESPN and NFL Network. I mean, that's an incredibly meaningful deal. But in the same vein, it comes back to where you can connect, you know, the two entities together in a more, that's the most meaningful way you can do it. It not only provides for, in many ways, the protection of the business, it provides for a concerted growth, you know, orientation towards the business as well. So at the end of the day, we were happy to do it. And I think where you can grow the enterprise value in the midst of doing all that, you know, it's all boats rising with the tide. And I'm sure as we work towards, you know, we want to continue our long-term relationships, it'll be a continuous part of how we do business with the leagues.
And I just want to fact check and you know, to enlighten everyone out there, Bruce, we're talking about Major League Baseball, the NBA, the NFL, correct?
Correct. Yes.
How, I mean, I want to go a little bit deeper on that too. How does it change or impact the way that you talk with them? I mean, you've always been, well, New Era's, any licensee is with a major league is a partner with that league. Mm-hmm. But when they're partners in more than one sense, you know, you touched on it when you said, we're working together even when things get tense. But how does it impact the tone of conversations?
You know, what I'd say is it probably gives us an orientation towards really being hyper-focused on the areas that are important for their growth as well. International is a great example of that. You know, baseball is obviously, you know, football, they're America's pride, America's passion, America's pastime, however you want to sort of define all of them. NBA being a global sport, you know, probably in the truest sense amongst the big three. And where it becomes important for them, you know, the NFL now playing games, you know, now a whole series of games. I think we're up to 13, 14 games, almost a full season slate, you know, of games that are being played around the world. And that's where I come back to, we're a perfect company for them because we already have a global presence. We can figure out how we can market into those consumer bases and begin to educate, begin to put the product in front of them and just, you know, try to create fandom wherever we can. So you just, you know, and I'll give you another, you know, sort of NFL example, you know, where something like flag football is now all of a sudden, literally from the youth level, from, you know, probably 5-6 year olds, now all the way up to the development of a professional league. So now for us, we say, hey, this is perfect for us. We already live in every one of those spaces. We already do things like all of the gear for the college players that are going to be coming into the league and who are going to be going through the NFL Combine. Let's figure out how we can take a lot of those inspirations from the Combine, turn them into useful, you know, apparel, especially performance apparel and related headwear into the flag football space. So, you know, it ends up being just, you begin to collaborate on areas of the business where you know they are looking towards what their next growth opportunities are.
I'm thinking back, John, and this was probably when you were in the agency game and working with New Era. New Era was, you know, as long as I remember it, always such a cool brand. And, you know, Bruce, I remember talking a bunch of years ago now, probably, I'm going to guess, 5 years ago or so with your predecessors about a evolution in New Era's outlook that probably wasn't visible to the fan, but it was very visible within the company. And they said, we're really focusing on revenue now, you know, like for, you know, essentially for a while, you know, we're driving a ton of revenue and it was, you know, going up, you know, but there was also that focus on really carving out a space and culture, and that's done. And now we're really, that's there, I should say. And now we're really focusing on revenue. And as you said, the company is in the billions now, and you said billions with an S at the end, plural. So clearly that's worked. And I'm wondering how you balance both these things. Obviously, you've got to drive revenue and make money. Yeah. Obviously, New Era is still very much a piece of pop culture.
The word you used is exactly the right word. It truly is a balance because you want to continue to grow. Like you said, we have investors. We need to make sure that we're demonstrating our ability to continue to grow and find areas of the business where there's either a new consumer base to link with, or we're going to a greater depth with an existing, a consumer, a group of consumers that we have. But I'll say you can never get away from what got you here, which is making sure that the product quality that you have is always there. It's getting to the consumer in a timely fashion. You're still designing things with quality fabrics and quality graphics. You can be as authentic as it gets and have as much street credibility as you could ever develop. But if you try to cheat the consumer, they're going to sniff it out in no time. And you'll begin to erode all those things you spent decades and even in this case, over a century developing. So it's one that, I will say you really have to make sure you respect everything that got you there, but just be able to figure out the ways where you can scale profitably, where you can do it in more places than you've ever done it, and where you begin to explore areas of the business. Like college is a great area for us. It was this strange ecosystem where we'd always been really relevant in the bookstore. So it's sort of off the field and unofficial, but you could go find great New Era headwear and great 47, headwear and apparel. But none of it was really, what we considered to be like in the New Era space, authentic. None of it was really, from an on-field delivery and seeing what a coach or a player wore while they were in competition. That's a space we're leaning into heavily. There's no reason why we shouldn't have the same presence and be really close to those championship moments with the hundreds of colleges that are out there in dozens of different sports. It's a very complicated matrix, like I said, but it's ripe for an evolution, I guess is how I'd leave you with that part of the
Well,
equation.
especially Bruce, when you're talking about college sports, there's quite the evolution
Yes.
the last few
Yeah.
years. And
No, to your point, and where all of a sudden, we can talk about our continued relevance in the NIL space.
right.
We love to tell stories and being able to tell authentic stories with student athletes and what they're doing, no matter what sport it is, men, women, sports that are at the top of kind of the pyramid when it comes to sort of revenue and exposure and visibility to ones where, it's probably a little bit more of a niche sport, but there's an incredible story to tell with an incredible student athlete. We're game for those, and that's beginning to be part of the playbook for us.
Hey, we're with Bruce Popko, the president of New Era. You know, you're closer to this than most anyone on the globe. What are you seeing now as trends? You brought up flag football as an opportunity. You brought up obviously the what we call the wild, wild west of college football or college sports, I should say. What other trends, what other sports, what other opportunities are you and the company looking at?
Yeah, I mean, those are certainly two of the biggest ones. I would tell you golf is another space that our ability as a global company to really, participate with the game of golf that's seen participation levels continue to grow. And again, globally grow has been important for us, where there are alternative properties in golf. We were an early adopter into the LIV, ecosystem. We'll
Sure.
see where LIV goes. We've been big proponents of it. I think the team golf space is highly intriguing because again, we've been, in the team business for decades upon decades, and it gives, fans something to root for as a team as much as the individuals on those teams. The other thing I'd say is that we're seeing this intersection of a lot of entertainment licenses, the Disneys and the Star Wars and the, Hasbros and where we can take those and marry them together with traditional team and league properties. You'll see some really interesting stories coming out of the NFL and Disney, their relationship this year, beginning to really start to figure out logical linkages between the stable of characters that the Disney, family owns and how to link those with NFL teams in some really fun and, interesting ways.
Yeah, I've just recently seen a lot of cross promotions between Toy Story 5
Exactly.
and the
Yep.
NFL. So you're
It's just kind of cool.
Yeah.
We're here with Bruce Popko, president at New Era Cap. Bruce, when you have a you know, global entertainment brand like Disney and a global sports brand like the NFL, and they're doing creative together, you know, and so you're going to see, this is a complete hypothetical, but you've got Mickey Mouse and you've got an NFL team, and you're going to be, you have the option to maybe do something creative with both of those. Can you talk about New Era's role in that creative process? Do you get input, or are you more at the receiving end of a message that essentially says, here's what we'd like to do, let me see what you can come up with?
Yeah, what they're normally doing is they're giving us the raw materials and say, go to work. You know, you know what to do to design against the different silhouettes that you have, whether that be headwear or apparel, into the different channels that you sell into, whether it's a highly curated specialty store or maybe a mass retailer like a Walmart or a Target, somewhere like that. And there's different products that go in those different places ultimately. So it ends up being a matrix that's really fun, because there's our designers love it, because it's some new, I'd say like bad puns, it's some new toys to play with, you know, ultimately. Mm-hmm. And for us to figure out a meaningful program that also hopefully is not a one-hit wonder, that's got some continuity and maybe it'll go on for a few years. We're fortunate in that, you know, our partners like a Disney, like the NFL, really give us a pretty long leash to help develop things that we think are going to work.
So your designers are having a lot of fun there.
They are. And listen, that's part of what, you know, before I was put into the president role, I was really running our global licensing and our business development. Part of me always tried to sit in the chair of our product people and our design people to say, is this something they'll be excited about if we get a license to do, you know, whatever it is, if it's motocross or if it's rugby or if it's, you know, something that's a little bit non-traditional, you know, will they be able to get their arms around it in a meaningful way? And then does the product that we make actually solve for something for that consumer base? Those are usually the two biggest questions. And where it comes up, you know, you get the double thumbs up, that's where you're usually beginning to move forward.
That's great. That's great. Hey, Bruce, as we wrap up here, you know, what's on the horizon for you? What's on the horizon over the next 6 to 18 months for New Era?
Yeah, I think it's fun to now watch the continued bringing together of properties that you never thought you'd really ever see working together. I'll give you a small example, but it's highly illustrative. So with the Knicks winning, and as they were getting into, you know, the series, we got approached by Nike, and they said, hey, listen, there's an old NYC logo with a swoosh on it that's really applicable to what's going on in and around the Knicks right now. They don't have the headwear license, but they have the uniform license. And they said, hey, would you ever consider putting both brands out there? And, you know, we were like, wow. I think if I asked that question to the Cook family 3 or 4 years ago, it would have been I don't even know whether I would have asked the question candidly.
Right.
And I know pretty much what the answer would have been. But we're in this space now where brands are figuring out that we don't lose anything by coming together. And in fact, we gain some things with those fans that are looking for something like that, that's so non-traditional, but so authentic to the story that we're trying to tell together, that it's the biggest win that you could have, short of, you know, winning an NBA right. finals, you know, for the first time in, you know, 53 years.
Bruce, that's amazing, because years back, that correspondence from Nike or someone else may have been either way, a cease and desist. So
exactly. Like, what do you, yeah, exactly. Or somebody would have just gotten it and probably deleted it.
Right. Right. Or this yeah. must be spam, right?
I guess back then would have gone in the shredder, technically, not deleted. So yeah,
that's right. No, but you know, there's so much global opportunity, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. and there's, you know, opportunities to grow the pie for both companies, as well as, I think more importantly, you know, delivering something unique to the fans, right? Mm-hmm. And it's great to hear that, you know, there's ways to work together with co-branded partners, licensees, but also, believe it or not, even competitors, right?
Competitors, yeah.
Very true.
Bruce, before we let you go too, in your role as president at New Era, how do you think about and how do you work with the Cook family to plan for what is next? And, you know, and for folks out there, the options You know, would obviously include remaining a private family-owned business with, you know, with the, you know, significant support of, you know, partner investors. IPO going public, I'm sure is always an option. People talk about it. Being acquired, I imagine, is an option. People have talked about that, but people will always talk about all these things. And for a successful company like New Era, they have for years. So, but you're in a position to help keep New Era, you know, thriving and open for possibilities. So how do you think about that? How do you guys talk about it?
Yeah, it's really just two basic things. It's being absolutely prepared for any of it. So whether you think about what the public markets might have to offer, you think about what the private markets, you know, may have to offer, whether they be strategics or acquisitions, to your point, you know, anything along those lines. And I think the other side is just making sure you have all those conversations and you're staying in touch with the folks that are the traditional members in the space, and then lots of emerging spaces. You've seen now so many new either private equity funds or funds within funds, you know, in big asset management shops and investment banks and places like that. So you really just have to make sure you're making the rounds and you're having conversations, and you're probably doing a lot more listening than you are talking to them to see where they think, you know, the industry is going specific to us, but then sort of the wider sports and entertainment industry.
That's great. Bruce, on behalf of Tim, myself, and the Skin in the Game viewers and listeners, want to thank you for taking the time out of your, what I know is a very busy, busy time for you. Keep up the great work at New Era. Keep delivering for the fans, and look forward to seeing you back here in Western New York.
Thank you. I really appreciate the time with the two of you.
Hey, thank you, Bruce.
There's really never a quiet time of the year in the business
of
sports.
Yeah, and I don't think when you're running New Era Cap, I don't think there's any vacation time set out for you. You got to pick it yourself.
Yeah. So as you know, as the conversation with Bruce was great, really found interesting how they're trying to balance, you know, being a growing company that's growing revenue in a big way, but also keeping its relevancy, and I think the word Bruce used a lot is authenticity to the brand.
Yeah, I'm glad he used that word, authenticity. That is, John, as you know, one of the buzzwords New Era has gravitated towards or embraced and put out there in the world for a long, long time now. And yeah, over the years, and I mean this in a good way, but that is a struggle New Era has had. You know, how do you be a revenue driven organization that is also doing what you need to do to leave your mark in culture and be relevant to not only to your consumers, but to influencers. And they were working with influencers before that was a profession.
Yeah, because, right? you know, we've always recognized that New Era flag, that logo, you know, on the side of ball caps, because it was, you know, that's the Major League headwear.
And it wasn't always there.
No, it wasn't.
Remember? It was not always there. It was a big deal when they got Major League Baseball to go for it.
Right. But I've always, you know, seen kind of New Era as more that underdog brand, right? When you're competing with Nike or Adidas or other, you know, sport apparel brands. And I always found that cool, is there's this underdog company from, you know, Buffalo, New York, family owned, that, you know, is really grassroots focused, right? And I think they can maintain that, and I know Bruce wants to maintain that kind of that grassroots image, but still, it's a big commercial brand.
I'll tell you a story that goes back, you know, about a decade or so, when the MLB All-Star Game was in Miami, which I believe it was about 9 years ago or so. I was down there, you know, at the invitation of New Era. I was writing about the company. And I shadowed at this, MLB, Major League Baseball All-Star Game party that they held. And, you know, I was sitting at the bar with a friend of mine who was a magazine editor in Miami, and there goes the actor Miles Teller walking by. J-Lo and A-Rod, they made an appearance. The place was crawling with Major League Baseball players.
The place to be,
celebrities. Yeah. And now what I don't know if those kind of parties are expensive. They're not going to break the bank for a company like New Era. I don't know that they're still focusing on doing that kind of thing. I'm sure to some degree that that's still the case. But back 10 years ago, and it's still a scrappy, smaller than it is now company, that was very much an underdog playing in a, you know, in a Nike world, holding parties like that, doing collabs like they were doing. And here's the thing, and this came up, and I agree with Bruce on it, consistently putting out an absolutely fantastic product.
Quality first, well, right.
Whether it was manufactured in the U.S., which it used to be, or now almost all of their caps, not all, but almost all are manufactured overseas. Either way, still putting out a high-quality cap. That was a tough balance to, you know, to strike, and they've actually achieved it.
Right, right. Well, I wanted to also kind of take a step back here, Tim, and reflect on a few things we talked to Bruce about, is that really that kind of that personal style, that the signals it sends to people when you're wearing your team apparel, right? You know, now it's part of your identity beyond the ballpark or beyond the arena. You know, years back, New Era had this kind of slogan was fly your flag, right? Mm-hmm. Fly your own flag. Be yourself, show off your personality. And I think now more than ever, you know, wearing these team branded apparel, hats in a different style, it could be the shape of the hat. It could be the colors. It could be an alternative logo. It
could be the way you bend the brim.
way you bend the brim. Just reflects your personal identity. And I think that is a real unique asset that New Era has, because they can still be nimble and flexible and creative and come up with products that fit the different personalities of their consumer audience.
And we talked about where that all began, John. It was that Spike Lee phone call to Chris Cook back in the mid-1990s. New Era had been around for many, many decades before that. And it really was, you know, at least from the, you know, 80s or so on, I might be a little off on the decades, but, you know, it was for, you know, actually even earlier than that, a baseball cap company. And they did military caps and other headwear too. But they, you know, I mean, their business was making caps players wore on the field, and maybe you could buy them and wear them when you went to a game. And that's a great business. And they did it really well. But that was their business. And then, you know, Spike Lee got involved, the Red Yankees cap. It went viral. You know, Fred Durst from Limp Bizkit, remember him?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd see him in a red cap in music videos, and all of a sudden you see
it was it became a fashion statement.
Yeah, musicians, dancers, actors, actresses. You know, they're all out there wearing this. You see it in paparazzi photos, and it became exactly what you said—a fashion item. And that has never changed. That has only grown and evolved.
I think that was the pivotal moment.
And that is for all baseball caps, not just New Era baseball caps.
Right,
although New Era does, with 47, frankly, dominate the space. But that Spike Lee phone call changed the headwear industry, not just New Era.
Could you imagine convincing George Steinbrenner? Who
I didn't know that part of it. I've heard that story so many times. No, I did not know. It makes sense, but I did not know Steinbrenner got involved. And I'm thinking back to our interview.
I wonder if it was George Costanza that asked him to, you know, to ask George to change the...
I sure hope it was.
That could be a Seinfeld episode.
Yeah, I was going to say, Seinfeld reference for people who maybe don't know. But I'm thinking back to our interview with Mike Vaccaro from the New York Post.
Right.
He wrote that great, great book about the Steinbrenner family. We talked to Mike about 5-6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
People should go check that out if you want to get a sense of what it might be like to convince George Steinbrenner to do anything.
The boss.
Yeah.
The boss. Yeah. Well, thank you, Bruce Popko, for giving us insight into New Era, you know, where the company's been, where the company is going. And, you know, it'd be great to watch the evolution of sport and entertainment and fashion, you know, continue to converge. So on behalf of Tim and I, thanks for listening and viewing Skin in the Game.
Skin in the Game is a production of Buffalo Toronto Public Media. You can catch up with all our episodes on btpm.org or on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel. Thanks for listening.